Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors. John, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Pleasure.
Do you want to tell our viewers a little bit about you for those who don't know you?
Okay. I started in the city in 1984, September 84, as a trainee analyst with Fleming Investment Management. I was there for about 14 years, and then I went to Henderson Global Investors. I managed institutional funds, so it was sort of pension funds for local authorities, big corporates, that sort of thing. Much of what I did, I was running UK equity portfolios, but much of what I did was sort of trying to beat the FTSE All Share by 1 to 1.5% per annum. So, I mean, it was a very good way of learning about investment, but it wasn't the most exciting thing. Very different from what you do as a private investor.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time in meetings, discussing whether we should be 1% overweight in share or 1% underweight, things like that. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's sort of low risk, pension funds. And if you beat the index by 1.5% per annum over a number of years, you know, that's quite a lot of value added to that pension scheme. So I did that. Then in 2009, I started managing my own money. Sort of full time, much to my wife's horror. And it's been great. But you know, we've been in a nice long bull market.
Yes,
so
this year has been perfect timing. Yeah, this year has been quite a phenomenal year. What sort of return have you got this year to date?
This year, up till last night, I'm up 22.7%,
which is brilliant.
Which I think the All Share total return's up about 6.7%. A lot of people say, why do you compare against the All Share when I've got mostly mid and small cap, I've got quite a lot overseas and things. And I just think it's a good benchmark, covers the whole UK market pretty much. And you know, there are times people forget, because we've had a great time where the FTSE 250 and small cap have done very well. There are times when the FTSE does better. And there's nothing stopping me holding FTSE stocks. In fact, you know, I hold a couple at the moment. So I use that index because I think it's just a good sort of view of how the market as a whole's done.
So with 22% return to date this year.
Yeah, last year wasn't so good.
Well, it goes up and down, and that's why it begs the question. A lot of people are saying the market's toppy. Mm-hmm. And particularly the American market is very highly valued.
Yeah.
Are you planning for that? What's your view on that?
Well, my first view is it's very difficult to time markets. And there are very few people who really, really can. And if they do once, it's probably luck. I'm sure they won't manage it a second time. But I would say, you know, we have had a long bull market, let's say from March 09, the bottom. And whether we're talking about a correction or a crash, I mean, a correction is what generally deemed as a 10% fall. You know, we haven't had one of those since, January, February 2016.
Yeah.
So I think a correction must be due. But to be fair, I've sort of been saying that all year. So I guess we're closer to it, but I don't know exactly when. And the other side of it, though, is I know you talk about valuations in the US and people, earnings growth has picked up this year. So that helps a bit, because that means that much of the increase in the market this year has not actually led to a higher valuation than a year ago, because earnings have picked up. But also, where else do you put your money? And I still think equities compared to other asset classes still look attractive, especially in the, you know, in the UK and Europe and things, because you get nothing for cash.
So you're not pulling out and putting
more money into cash?
What I am doing is, in terms of my stock selection, I suppose I'm being a little more cautious. So I'm very wary. I could be totally wrong. A lot of these stocks may double and treble or whatever. So, but in terms of how I'm positioning myself, I'm very wary of a lot of the sort of growth stocks, which have moved on to very, very high valuations.
Give us an example.
Well, I mean, Boohoo, Fevertree, I guess Keyword Studios, but that's not quite as high. I mean, these sort of stocks where they've got a big following, people love them, and in many ways rightly so, because they're well-managed businesses. I mean, Fevertree is fantastic when you look at, you know, the way they've built that business, and also it's sort of a virtual business almost. They actually make the stuff themselves, you know, it's outsourced and things. So very clever. But what valuation is it on? And I just personally wouldn't feel comfortable paying this valuation, because if things go wrong, I don't mean things particularly for them go wrong, but if we did have a market setback, bear market, whatever, what tends to happen, I think, is that you see a sort of valuation compression. Mm. Good stocks and bad stocks all end up on pretty much the same valuation. And that's because, I guess, people want to take money out of the market. They tend to take money out of their winners, the stocks that have done well. The stock starts to come off, and you know, then you see more selling and more selling. And there's always a justification for why, oh, I can sell a bit of that one because it's still on a high rating or whatever.
So, did you have any momentum shares in your portfolio?
I guess my highest rated stock is Bioventix. It's also one of my biggest holdings. And you know, it's had a good run recently since the trading statement. Yes. Well, there's around £27. Yes. I think that's on about 30 times earnings now to the year that just finished in June. So that'll be coming down quite a bit next year. But yeah, I mean, if we went into a bear market, even my beloved Bioventix, people would sell. I mean, there's people with a lot of profits. So I'm sticking with it, but say that's my highest valued stock. A lot of my stocks are on 11, 12, 13, 14 times with good dividend yields. And I think, you know, as long as, you know, I check the cash flow and the balance sheets, are those dividends safe? And hopefully, if we did go into a bear market, they'll see me fine.
So what percentage of cash have you got?
At the moment, about 2%, 2.5%.
Okay.
I mean, I've got, you know, a number of holdings where, you know, I watch them, and if we were to move, if the market was to roll over and those stocks, I've got in mind what stocks I might just say, right, let's just sell them, get my cash up. But I probably would never move my cash up much more than about 10%. The reason for having cash is because, as I say, you get valuation compression, good stocks get derated. And the reason for having some cash is because it's enormously frustrating if you don't have any. And, you know, these sort of gems are at a very low valuation.
But what's the catalyst to create the cash?
It would be more from a sort of market movement. So, I mean, I never buy stocks because of a chart, but I always look at the chart because the chart tells you what's going on. You know, you mentioned earlier on that, you know, the markets are hitting new highs. And I always say, good. I mean, that's why we buy equities, because we want them to hit new highs. In the same way as we buy stocks. And when a stock hits a new high, you know, psychology often makes us think, oh, should I take some profits or whatever? When you should just be going, that's why I bought this stock, because it was going to hit new highs. So looking at a chart, I think, sort of tells you what's going on. And if I really saw a stock roll over that, I was a little ambivalent about, perhaps it wasn't something I felt really strongly about, then that might trigger me just say, all right, let's have some cash. But quite a lot of these falls happen very quickly. I mean, if we go back to January last year, 2016, yeah, everyone's happy at the moment, we're making money, but that was the worst start ever.
Yeah.
Ever. Well, yeah, since they've recorded these things for the US stock market. And it felt pretty nasty. But no one can really understand why that happened. But, you know, it hit a bottom in February. And since then, it's all been up. The odd blip along the way, but pretty minor blips.
So you must have been through a few complete crashes.
Yeah.
What did you learn from them?
Okay, well, the interesting one, 1987 was the first one, I guess. And I'd been working, 3 years then. And I remember going into work. I managed to get into work on the Friday through all the fallen down trees and things.
Oh, yes.
There were quite a lot of people who didn't get in because people who lived out and, you know, in the sticks. And, you know, the Friday, I suppose there was a hint, but none of us expected what was going to happen on the Monday. Although if you look back in the US on the Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, that did actually fall 10% before the Monday. And then, of course, on the Monday, it fell 20% in a day. One thing I learned was that I looked at the experienced old hands. You know, I thought, gosh, they'll know what to do here. And actually, they had their head in their hands. You know, they'd never seen anything like that before themselves. And so that was one thing. You know, every time it's different, there's different reasons. And no one can really tell you what to do. But I guess the thing I did learn is that unless you've been lucky and anticipated it and raised your cash, I think the best thing is then just to step back and just, in a way, watch. Enjoy it in some ways, if that's possible. Because I do remember then we ran multi-asset portfolios for our pension funds, and I remember we made a huge mistake in that we sold all our US exposure, or most of our US exposure, near the bottom. And the logic was that this crash was bound to have an effect on consumer confidence in the US and would lead to a slowdown in the economy, etc. And of course, it didn't. And the US market rebounded. Over 1987 as a whole, it was up 3%. And then in 88, 89, carried on up. So, in other words, we'd have been better to have done nothing.
Yeah.
And I think, so that's one thing. Unless you anticipate it well, then the risk is you're just going to end up selling at the bottom. And then you just compound it, make things even worse. I mean, if you look at a chart of the stock market over the last, go from 1980, I mean, things like 1987, they hardly even figure in it now.
Mm.
Just a little blip. You might think, what was that? Oh, gosh, that was 87 crash, etc. So I do think the best thing to do is to spend your time focusing on your stocks rather than worrying too much about markets.
Were you caught up in the dot-com bubble?
Caught up. Actually made some good money out of it. But what you've got to be... I mean, there's a stock called EasyNet, which I bought personally. And I made about 10 times my money. And the person who'd mentioned this stock to me, on the day of their results, I bumped into him in the gym. And he was an analyst, telecoms thing. And he said to me, it's just started. There's a lot further to go. And I got excited. I thought, wow, you know, this is... And unfortunately, I should have sold them all then, literally then. That I should have gone back to the office, got out. But I didn't. I didn't add to them. Anyway, I ended up selling a couple of months later, but I'd still made 7 times my money. So I did make money out of stocks there, but the main thing is, was realising when the mood had changed and then just saying, right, this is highly valued, rubbish, time to get out. I wouldn't really buy stocks like that nowadays because, you know, my whole, I think I've learned so much since I started managing money for myself, because it's there's a real discipline in that, you know, when you're running money for yourself, the only thing you want to do is make money. I mean, beating the index is fine, okay, but the main thing is to make money. The second thing is, you know, I've learnt about more about the psychology of investing, because before I was, you know, I was running a UK equity fund that was fully invested, so I was just trying to pick the best stocks and avoid the worst ones, beat the index. Whereas now, much more psychology in terms of, you know, cutting losses, saying I've got this wrong, actually accepting, you know, I've got this wrong. I mean, a lot of people struggle with that. Mm. In fact, I was talking to someone the other day who who's a follower of my website, and we were having a chat, friend, and said, and I said, if I was you, I'd just sell that stock, just get out, move on and do that. And she said, but I'm making a loss. And I said, but that doesn't matter, because we've got better things to put your money in. Unless you really believe that this is the bottom and the stock's going to go up, and that you really believe in the company and what's going on, just sell it. You'll feel a lot better and put it in something better. So, you know, there's always that psychology you've got to fight. And the main one is admitting to yourself you've got something wrong.
Yes. Do you use stop losses?
I don't use sort of automatic stop losses, because the risk, especially with small or mid-cap, there can be a bit of news, can be anything, and the stock spikes down, you're out, and then you look at the end of the day and you go, blimey, you know, someone's got my stock. But I sort of, again, looking at the charts, we'll mentally have a view that if the stock closes below this level here, then maybe I should then reconsider, sell, whatever. But it's done more on a judgment. But, you know, I don't sort of set 10%, 20%, anything like that. I think the best thing is if you have a long-term chart of a stock and you put it on the wall, look at it from 5 yards away, and you can then tell, has that rolled over? Has the trend changed? Much easier to see. And if it has, you've then got to look back at the fundamentals, why you bought it and things, and then maybe just say, look, maybe I can come back to this another time.
So what's the largest loss you've got in your portfolio?
At the moment, we've had a long bull market, haven't we? But I think it's about, this here is ranked by my loss, and it's about 7 or 8%.
So that's well within a respectable amount.
Yeah. But, I mean, at the moment, I was going to say you can buy rubbish and it'll go up. My worst one is Bloomsbury Publishing, which is off 6.3% on my in price. I bought that in July. I'm attracted there by a PE of 13. A yield of 4.5, and the latest results, trading statements show that earnings are being upgraded because they're beating expectations. So I'm looking forward to results next. I think they're next month. Yeah.
So what is your catalyst for selling a share?
Selling, I don't really have the same sort of catalyst. You know, we're buying. You can look at the valuation and you can go, there's upgrades and things, so you get involved. I think for selling, it's much more when the earnings estimates start to move the wrong way, or if the company disappoints. I mean, if it disappoints, I'm not automatically going to sell. I've had one this week, Card Factory, which came out with earnings a little below expectations, and the share price has been hit hard, like happens with these things.
How much did it go down?
It's down 20%. Maybe not as bad as some of the others we've had this year, but I think the reason being the dividend yield's very good, the cash flow is very strong, etc. And so I've looked at that one, and that one I haven't cut. I've actually added to it because I just think the valuation's mad and the cash flow is so strong, and they are a real winner in their category in terms of squeezing out sort of smaller competitors, family firms, etc. Catalyst for selling. I sold two stocks while we're on sort of stocks that have plummeted recently. I sold two stocks, Dixon's Carphone and SafeStar. I sold both of those in January, having made very good money out of them. SafeStar, I'd nearly doubled my money over a few years. And the reason I sold them was more from a top-down view that the UK consumer was going to be squeezed because we had inflation moving up, which would squeeze real incomes. And that with something like SafeStar, my view was, you know, they're generally fairly big ticket items. And although people buy them on credit and that sort of thing, it's still quite a commitment. And it's the sort of thing you go, replacement windows, maybe I'll see through this winter, I'll wait till next year or something. So that was my reason for selling those. And the valuation no longer looked attractive. So you've got to remember, with my investment diary, it's all there on the, you know, on the website. I can always look back and I can go, when I bought this, this is what I said. And often I'll say, this stock's on a P of 11, it's growing at 17% and whatever. And then you have a look a few years later and you go, this stock's now on a P of 17, it's growing at 8%. You think, okay, so the valuation's changed. It's no longer on my side. The valuation is not on my side.
Do you normally set a target price when you buy into something?
No. No, I used to, and I found that that tied me up a bit, because you'd set a target price, but then things change. And I mean, maybe it's worth having a price where you might review it and say, look, I think at the moment this justifies the price of that. When it gets there, I'll review it. But I found that it was making me do things perhaps that I didn't want to do. It hit the price and I think, oh, I better sell some, when actually it wasn't the right thing to do.
And going back to Dixon's, which you said you sold out of as well, what was the catalyst there?
Same thing, same sort of concern. UK consumer, well, there were two actually with that one. One was the UK consumer would be squeezed, so perhaps they wouldn't have quite as much money to spend on nice new electronics. But the second was that I thought margins would be squeezed because they import a lot of what they sell. So with sterling falling in the second half of last year, that would push up the price of what they sell, and they'd probably have to take a margin squeeze on that. So those were the two main concerns with that one. In fact, you know, in the end, it was what the problem, the real problem was Carphone Warehouse, which they bought a few years ago. So, yeah, but maybe that squeeze will still come on the rest of the business.
And talking about crashes, how were you positioned in 2008 and what was the effect for you there?
Well, 2008, you see, at that stage, because I was still managing funds. And so my sort of personal investments tended to be in funds or investment. I'm a big fan of investment trusts. So they used to be in investment trusts. And yeah, so it got hit hard that year. It was an extraordinary time because, you know, I remember beginning of 2009 and things, you had people worrying about whether their £50,000 at HSBC was safe. You sort of forget just how sort of scary it was. And yet again, the best thing was to keep a calm head and leave your stocks alone. But make sure that you're not in the risky things. I mean, I did have one personal holding, which I lost money on, which was SCS. The furniture sort of shop, which went into one of those sort of package voluntary. And that hit me. And that was a real lesson.
How much did you lose with that?
Oh, gosh, I think it was too much, but I probably put about £10,000 or so into it at that time.
Salutary,
so a painful
lessons,
lesson. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Because you can't get it back then.
Yeah.
So I think the real lesson there was you've really got to, in a crash situation like that, is be very careful about what you are holding. You know, will this stock be there in 3 or 4 years' time?
So what do you think we can expect over the next, well, till the end of the year, the rest of 2017?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because there's a seasonal effect, which I think since I first learnt about it 10 years ago, doesn't seem to work as well now. It's always the same, isn't it? Once everyone's talking about something. But if you can get through October, September's often a nervous time, get through October, because I think the crash of 29 started in October, and obviously the 87 crash and things. Then, you know, November, December, January, February, March, April's normally a pretty good time of year. But what have we got to worry about? The Bank of England's talked about interest rates moving up. Maybe that'll happen. And if they do, I don't think much will happen, because they'll be very wary about what they do to the housing market and the knock-on effects of that. So I sort of think I'll believe it when it happens. And actually just talking about it led to a strengthening of sterling, which sort of has a desired effect in helping bring down inflation. So I believe that when it happens. Should we worry about inflation? We've got a bit of inflation, imported inflation, because of the devaluation of sterling last year, but underlying inflation pressures aren't there at all. I think there's still too much capacity around in the world, not enough demand. But I guess there could be an inflation shock. Oil is at the highest it's been for 18 months. Maybe that could, for some reason, shoot up. So you've got to be wary of something like that. But I'm not too nervous, really. You know, I'm not sort of sitting there thinking, oh, there's a crash round the corner.
So you sort of think the market will carry on bobbing between sort of 7,300 and 7,500?
I think it will, because I'm not quite sure where people will, where else you can put your cash. Because you can, which sounds a bit lame, but you take it out and put it on deposit, you're losing money because inflation's around 3% and RPI is well over 3%. You're getting nothing on deposit. You could buy gilts. I think if we're going to talk about bubbles, I guess if anywhere, I think that's where there's a bubble in government bonds, because, you know, and I guess that's been helped by QE and also a massive move by pension funds. Just, you know, the sort of old, good old final salary pension schemes have sort of been closed and gone, and now they're all matching their liabilities, you know, their assets to their liabilities. So I wouldn't want to hold gilts or other government bonds. Gold, I find that's just so dull. You don't get any income from gold, you don't get a dividend, and occasionally it has these spikes up. So gold doesn't attract me. So where? Equities. And that's it. I read down my list. I mean, I talked about Bioventix. Conviviality is another one of my larger holdings. I've doubled my money in that so far. It's a yield of 3.5%, pretty low PE. I think a fairly defensive business.
Isn't the debt quite high?
The debt is quite high, but I think it's a very stable business, because, you know, on the one hand they serve restaurants and bars, etc., but the other side they supply bargain booze and people like that. And I think even if we go into a recession, people will carry on drinking. Mm. They may even drink more. Mm. They might not go up as much, but they may therefore buy more from bargain booze. So I think it's a fairly stable and defensive business. And I think it's pretty well managed.
So equities are the place to be?
I think they are, you know. And I'm in a year's time. I might go, oh, did I really say that a year ago? If the market has had a pretty tough period. But then, you know, I really believe that, you know, I'm investing to give myself security when I'm in my 60s, 70s, 80s, hopefully, or whatever. So it's all about security and providing me with an income. And so if I'm happy with the stocks I've got, that those stocks will be there in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, still paying me a dividend, then in many ways I'm happy to ride out these falls. Although, as I said, it's nice to have a bit of cash at the bottom.
And all of your equities are dividend paying. That's a key criteria.
Yeah, well, nearly all. I've got a few investment trusts. I mean, if I run down my list, Conviviality is my largest holding. That's got a good dividend. Bioventix, pretty good dividend, and it always goes up more than people expect because cash flow. I've then got, as I said, I mentioned investment trusts. Mm. I hold a number of investment trusts. So I've got TR European Growth, Baillie Gifford Shin Nippon, and these are investing in smaller cap companies, TR European Growth obviously in Europe, Baillie Gifford in Japan. I mean, just a fantastic record of performance. Mm. You know, sometimes I wonder why I pick my own stocks. I could just hold some of these investment trusts with some really good managers. And they're really picking winners. So they're some big holdings for me. And it's great because it gives me some diversification outside the UK. Mm. We've got our own problems with Brexit or whatever. Who knows how that'll pan out? And also gives me exposure to faster growing areas of the world. Mm. So, you know, India Capital Growth Fund, I've got 4% of my portfolio in that because I think over the next 10 years, there'll be a lot faster growth in India. Yeah. And again, that picks mid-cap stocks in India. So it's not the sort of nifty 50 that some of the other sort of investment trusts in India will hold. But running down this, you know, Debt Telecom, good yield there, 3% or so. Card Factory, I mean, that's 3.5% on their ordinary dividend, but they're also paying a special. Royal Dutch Shell, Lloyds, I mean, both, 6.5% dividend yields. They're my two FTSE stocks. UNI Group. So, yes, I mean, dividends are important. Just keep reinvesting those dividends.
Very good. John, thank you very much indeed for all of your insights.
Thank you very much.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.